From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
The first athlete you heard about coming out as gay, Sean asked me, how would you feel about playing with a gay player? And I have one question. Could he play?
the caliber of his competence.
Right, that's all.
Jim, you know, I can't add to that.
Huh?
I cannot add to that.
Okay.
Well, leave it alone.
Jim was a professional in the most macho of all American sports. And it seems to me, it may not be a good correlation, but a lot of questions they asked about gay athletes were essentially the same questions they used to ask about us,
absolutely,
black athletes.
Absolutely.
You know.
Well, isn't it a simple situation? We have laws in this country, and we try to abide by the laws. We have different denominations. We have different races, et cetera, gender. And if you're a law-abiding citizen and trying to do the right thing, then how could anyone else judge you? I mean, I think it's that simple.
Jim Brown, Hall of Fame running back for the Cleveland Browns, and Bill Russell, Hall of Fame center for the Boston Celtics. This past April, the LBJ Presidential Library on the campus of the University of Texas at Austin hosted a Civil Rights Summit to mark the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. The summit featured three former presidents and President Obama. It also looked back at the civil rights movement of the 1960s and looked forward to the civil rights issues still facing America and the world. The summit was entitled, We Shall Overcome. President Johnson began his quest for a more just and honorable America with the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the most transformational civil rights legislation since Reconstruction, and a critical step in the realization of America's promise. In the years that followed, LBJ passed the Voting Rights Act of 1965 and the Fair Housing Act of 1968. Together, these three laws would ban discrimination based on race, color, sex, religion, or national origin. I'm Johnny O'Hanson Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, highlights of the Civil Rights Summit to mark the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 with Hall of Famers Bill Russell and Jim Brown in Black America.
Doc, I was very fortunate to have a great mother, no father. Went to high school with a great coach, the greatest man I've ever met in my life, Ed Walsh. A great mentor, Kenny Malloy. And they were impeccable from the standpoint of advocating education, self-determination. And I had an example of people that were really good. And there was tremendous discrimination in this country at the time. And it was told to me that I could be loved and popular if I would bow down and do a little dance. I don't know if y'all know what that means. But I said, I don't really dance. I just prefer to be a man, an American citizen. And I pay my taxes, I want my rights. So freedom, equality, and justice, what I pursued, and I pursued it at all costs because nothing else would substitute for that. No trophy, no form of popularity. And because I was helped as a young man, I knew that my life's work would be to help others.
The Civil Rights Act of 1964 was a revolutionary piece of legislation in this country that effectively outlawed egregious forms of discrimination against African Americans and women, including all forms of segregation. On July 2, 1964, President Lyndon Baines Johnson signed into law the historic Civil Rights Act. This past April, for 3 days, the LBJ Presidential Library on the campus of the University of Texas at Austin hosted a Civil Rights Summit to mark the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. The summit was entitled, We Shall Overcome. Jim Brown is known worldwide for his Hall of Fame football career and later gained notoriety as an actor. He became the first African-American actor portrayed in a leading role in action films. Brown boldly stood up for civil rights, fighting for equality and against injustice with courage and integrity. At the height of his football playing days, Brown started the Negro Industrial Economic Union. Bill Russell was the cornerstone of the Boston Celtics dynasty of the 1960s, an uncanny shot blocker who revolutionized NBA defense concepts. He was a 5-time NBA Most Valuable Player and a 12-time All-Star. Russell helped the Celtics hang 9 NBA championship banners in the Boston Garden in his first 10 seasons. During the Civil Rights Summit, Brown and Russell addressed the issue of sports and civil rights during their careers. Dr. Harry Edwards, Professor Emeritus at the University of California, Berkeley, moderated the discussion.
I was very fortunate to have a great mother, no father. Went to high school with a great coach, the greatest man I've ever met in my life, Ed Walsh. A great mentor, Kenny Malloy. And they were impeccable from the standpoint of advocating education, self-determination. And I had an example of people that were really good. And there was tremendous discrimination in this country at the time. And it was told to me that I could be loved and popular if I would bow down and do a little dance. I don't know if y'all know what that means. But I said, I don't really dance. I just prefer to be a man, an American citizen, and I pay my taxes. I want my rights. So freedom, equality, and justice, what I pursued, and I pursued it at all costs because nothing else would substitute for that. No trophy, no form of popularity. And because I was helped as a young man, I knew that my life's work would be to help others. So that's who you have here.
Bill, what took you down that path that you took? I was reading Go Up for Glory, and you stated, I have never been one to pursue being liked. From day one, I was about being respected. And what took you down that path at 22, 23 years old?
I guess it started when I was born. My mother and father, the first thing I knew about life was my mother and father loved me. And my mother, I was born in the segregated South in the 30s in Louisiana.
Louisiana.
And my mother, our first conversation, said to me, there's nobody on this planet any better than you. Also, there's nobody on this planet that you're better than them. And so I grew up with confidence that I was okay. And my mother and father always treated each other with respect. And so when I went out into the world, that's where I thought it was supposed to be.
Okay. And did everything you could to change it to make it that way when it wasn't.
Huh?
Did everything that you could to make it that way when it wasn't.
Well, my mother told me when I was young, she says to me one day, you can play in the front yard for the first time. She had kept me in the backyard all the time. And she said, the reason I want you to play in the front yard is people will walk by and they will say things to you, good or bad, but it has nothing to do with you. It has to do with them and their perspective. And so you play and have fun and don't worry about that.
Okay.
And so when I grew up, I encountered things. I knew I was okay. And so moving ahead, a few years ago, I met Nelson Mandela, and we had a brief conversation. And I asked him how he could be such a good person of all the things that he had encountered. And he said, if I had reacted the way they predicted that I would act, then they were right. But he said, I am a Mandela. And that's where I get my philosophy from, is that the opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is indifference. And so the only way that humans can evolve is they have to care about each other.
That was evident throughout a number of your chapters in your book. So let me ask you this, Jim. In particular, I was looking at a book entitled "The 100 Most Important People in American Sports," and quite fittingly, Billie Jean King is on the cover. But there was a statement that you made early on in one of your earliest books, where you stated that you had never been there had never been a time when you were not conscious of the civil rights movement. You stated, I was very conscious of the civil rights movement and very active in what I call the movement for dignity, equality, and justice. In fact, it superseded my interest in sports. Sports gave me an opportunity to help the cause, and that is what I dedicated myself to doing. Now, I know that you supported the civil rights movement, but you were ahead of the civil rights movement in terms of your focus on economic development. What led you to move beyond simple desegregation to economic development, to starting the Black Economic Union, setting up these offices all over the country, traveling through the Deep South in a bus with other professional athletes, talking to small business people in Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee? What led you to that sense that that was the direction things had to go into?
Well, Harry, it was the understanding that people had to get off of their butts, and regardless of what the condition, use as much intelligence and labor as they could to deliver themselves. We couldn't depend on the government or corporate America or anyone. And so I was always a person that advocated economic development because America is a capitalist society. It's based on economics. If you don't use economics in your community will never grow. The Jewish community in this country and the world has proven that collectively you can be a minority and apply the right principles and emancipate yourself. So I thought that the African-American community had to apply itself, have the greatest communities, the safest communities, and probably most of all, understand economic development. So that was the way that I led, and I attracted the top young MBAs in the country. Spencer Jourdain was my number one guy, graduate of Harvard, magna cum laude. And I got the top Black athletes in the country, and I put them together. And we got a grant from the Ford Foundation of over $1 million at the time. And we had a fund that any young Black entrepreneur could come and make that loan and get the benefit of the knowledge of our national business planning team. And so that was the way I felt we could gain equality quicker than doing anything else.
You know, I want people to really understand. We're talking about some, think of a 27-year-old athlete today that would have that kind of insight and vision. This is how far ahead you were in terms of that situation. It astounds me even now. Bill, you too had a sense of the necessity of economic development. Not only did you have your own business here, but long before globalization came into the language and lexicon of the society, you had already set up relationships in West Africa and were talking about how we needed to connect with African countries and have some mutual economic development and so forth. You also went into the South. I mean, 2 months after Medgar Evers' assassination, I know you went down to Mississippi, and it was a frightening time, and held integrated basketball clinics in Mississippi 2 months after Medgar Evers' death. And of course, your Boston Celtic teammates, as you stated, said, don't worry about it, you're gonna be safe, you're gonna be okay, just keep a low profile. But you went down and held those clinics, and while you were down there, you talked to young people about the necessity of completing school, becoming economically viable, and so forth.
Well, most of the people that were, as I could see, were economically deprived. And I saw that as one of the places where you can purchase equality. If you have what start out as a charity, you can make it a force. And I know I was in Boston, and there was a great many questions about why I would go to Africa. And people told me, said, the Africans don't like you. Well, the people that were telling me that didn't like me. So I wanted to go and see for myself, okay? And or some guy came to me and says, what do you know about Africa? You don't know anything about them. They're not like you, and you got no business doing that. So I said, you know, I have this family that are friends of mine, And they have been accused of supporting the Irish Revolution. And the family was the Kennedys, all of them. And in fact, I'm old enough that I remember meeting and sitting and talking with Rose Kennedy. And I says, well, if it's all right for them to go back where their ancestors came from, why isn't that all right for me to go back where I think my ancestors came from? And so it was all about, see, I never, ever considered myself as a leader or anything like that. All I did was, one thing I wanted to make sure, that I never did anything that my father would be ashamed of. So the things I did, for example, I coached the Boston Celtics. I was the player coach of the Boston Celtics. And so they said, well, you're the first black coach in the NBA. In fact, you're the first black coach manager in baseball, football, and basketball in the major leagues. What about that? And I said to them, if Red had ever said to me, this is a great social experiment, I would have nothing to do with it. The only reason I would do it is because I'm convinced that I'm the best person for the job. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, what I consider try to do everything in my life based on merit, and I expect that all other people I surround myself with
to do the same.
Now, Jim and I have known each other since college, and he tell me all the time that he was a better basketball player than I was anyway.
Averaged 38 points a game.
And I said, Jim, no. In fact, I said to him one time, I said, you know, I think you're one of the greatest athletes, if not the greatest athlete of the 20th century. But leave basketball alone. You see, Jim saw, and I supported, if you don't have any wherewithal to exercise influence, then you'll never succeed in exercising influence. And I tried to live a life that would exercise influence. I personally am not interested in that. I'm just interested in, I raise my kids, and I always let them know that I loved them. I think that's one of the key things about raising kids. My daughter, I have to fight off her telling me what to do now. She graduated from Harvard Law School, and the minute she gets a degree from Harvard, she knows everything. And so I just try to see where things are needed, recognize that things are needed, and try to put myself in a place where I can make a difference.
Let's jump to the present. Where did the train leave the track? I mean, where are the Bill Russells? Where are the Jim Browns? I know we don't expect people to do things the same way that they were done in the 60s, in the same sense that Bill, you and Jim didn't do things the same way that Jackie Robinson did or that Jesse Owens or Joe Louis did. But what happened? How did we come to a place where we have the level of uninvolvement, apathy, almost a lack of concern about these broader issues that you speak of now?
Well, a couple of things I'll say about it. You mentioned Jackie Robinson. I met him a couple times. When he died, I got a call from Rachel Robinson. It said that she wanted me to be a pallbearer at his funeral. And I said, kids my age, that's an overwhelming honor. Why me? She said, you were one of Jackie's favorite athletes. And I took that to say Jackie had done a tremendous thing for us. He was the first black to play baseball, but he was never a pushover. And he took us to a place that opening up this whole world for us. But I was not going to revisit that place till he could. I wanted to take it to the next step.
Which you most certainly did.
And so when Red asked me, he said, he's retiring. That's Auerbach, my coach. He says, I'm retiring. I got to find a coach to replace me. He says, first, do you want the job? I said, hell no. I said, I'll watch what you've gone through. I don't want no part of that. So we agreed, both made out a list of 10 guys that we would approve of. He says, nobody can get the job unless you approve of it. So I made a list of 10, and he made a list of 10. There were no matches. And so he said, well, what do you want to do? I said, I don't know. He says, okay, well, he decided to hire this one coach. And he says, this is who I'm going to hire. So I said, Red, if you hire him, I am going to retire with you. I don't even want to be in the same room with that person. I cleaned it up by saying person. he says, why? I says, no, I will not be on the team with him. He says, well, what do you want to do? I said, I'll tell you what. I'll take the job as a player coach, and if it doesn't work, if you ask me to, I'll quit, or you can fire me. It doesn't make any difference. And I will give whoever you replace me with 100% cooperation, because I didn't want to. I had grown to love that organization, and I wasn't going to do anything to harm it.
Mess it up.
But, you know, I had a song written for me, and it talks about my father. And the key line to the song was, I am my father's son. And he taught me how to be a man by being one. And so I think that I can have friendships with guys that politically we're completely opposed. But since I demand respect, I must also give respect. And so the things I did, I tried to do for the right reason, never to prove anything to someone I don't know. Jim is a lifelong friend, probably after my father, the best friend I've ever had. And the whole thing was based on mutual respect. You know, what's odd about it to me is that Jim and I have known each other since college, and that's in the 50s. And I do not remember, and he says he doesn't remember, when we met.
Momentous time there, momentous moment, yeah.
But the foundation is, of the whole thing is, we live in America, and the better America is for everybody here, the better America will be.
Emphasize what you said, Bill, because this is a very diverse audience, and sometimes I'm misunderstood. I think sometimes you misunderstood. But when you talked about Jackie Robinson, and I knew Jackie very well, had a lot of admiration for him, but I always talked about the man that truly integrated baseball. It was not Jackie, it was Branch Rickey. Jackie called him Mr. Rickey. And he stepped out from the power structure, and he decided that baseball should be integrated. One reason might be because it's the right thing to do. The other reason might be because box office, you know, there was a whole black audience out there that went to baseball games. And he could have chosen Satchel Paige or Josh Gibson because they were great, great baseball players. But he chose Jackie because he knew Jackie had the ability to play great baseball, yet play the political role that he had to play, even though it was killing him. And so I say to you that I had a lot of respect for Branch Rickey and people like him. So if I digress from there, I go to slavery and the Underground Railroad. And you must take notice of these things to be able to live in America properly, I feel. And the Underground Railroad represented Harriet Tubman. And Harriet Tubman was given tremendous praise for being that pioneer who basically lived her life to free the slaves. What is also overlooked is that those free houses that those people put up for the slaves to stay at and to hide them and to get them up to the north and get them to Canada were regular people, nothing special. But the commonality was that they were good human beings. And when we talk, the three of us, and I want to emphasize this, we always talk about the category of good human beings before we talk about white, black, whatever, however. And that becomes important in being a man, because if I have that charity in my soul or the wisdom to recognize goodness in people, then I'm a man of God, a man of trying to do the right thing. Therefore, nothing you can do or say to me will change my attitude about my manhood. And over the years, the biggest problem that we've had in this country is whenever you stand up for the right thing, even though it's for the overall populace, people take the attitude that you are a racist, or they call it an opposite racist. And so I wanted to make that point, because when you say, where are we today? The one guy that I depend on most, young man that just won the Super Bowl and who's a tremendous human being and who's gotten through some troubled times and who understands what we're doing, is Ray Lewis. And Ray, I think, can be the leader of a lot of these young individuals who need that leadership, who want to learn what to do and how to participate in making tremendous change within this country.
Let me ask this. I know that progress, many times, is a lot like the concept of profit. It really comes down to who's keeping the books. And so in looking at where we are, how much progress have we actually made in sports, given the fact that we're down to 8% African Americans in baseball from 21% in 1973. The heavyweight division of boxing has just about been wiped out. I remember a time, and you do too, when there was Ali and Frazier and Ken Norton and George Foreman and Liston and Patterson and Jimmy Ellis and Jimmy Young and Ernie Terrell and Big Cat Cleveland Williams and a guy by the name of Larry Holmes who couldn't break into the lineup. He was just a sparring partner. Today, you couldn't find two people in 100 in the African-American community who could tell you if there was a black heavyweight contender around now. When you look at the fact that the NBA is one quarter foreign-born, we're losing spots there. How much progress have we actually made? Where are we in terms of that concept?
Well, Harry, I'm going to jump in there, because I think in a simple way I can say that Jimmy Carter, President Carter, experienced yesterday was almost everything that you need to know about progress, about heart, about honesty, and about the future. He is on top of it in every way. So I would say to all of America, if you can get a tape of the Jimmy Carter presentation of yesterday at that affair, it's unbelievable.
Hall of Famer Jim Brown. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to future In Black America programs, email us at jhanson, H-A-N-S-O-N, at kut.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. You can hear previous programs online at kut.org. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm John L. Hanson, Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.